In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby.
You bet, it's time to talk movies. Alan Adams joining us on the telephone line this afternoon. Hello, Alan.
Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. I understand you're battling a cold, and being the kind, thoughtful person that you are, you decided to keep your germs to home.
Well, it just seemed like, being in an enclosed space with you guys, I love to share with you, but maybe not this.
Well, we appreciate you thinking of us.
Yeah, I managed to push through the last couple of shows this weekend, and then it really laid me low starting this morning. It's just like, okay, yeah, no, I need to stay away from people for a little bit.
It's funny how your body can sense like, oh, you've got a couple of days of no shows, so we're going to give it to you good right now.
Right. Like it was, I was a little, feel the beginnings on Saturday, and then Sunday was a little rougher. And then I got up this morning. I'm like, oh yeah, no, this is not ideal what's happening right now, but I should be fine by Wednesday. And that's really all that matters.
Well, yeah. And congratulations to you and your castmates. So we had a chance to see Hockey Mom on Saturday night, and everybody involved did a wonderful job. And I'm not just saying this, but you and Jenny were so terrific as the parents.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate that. Jenny's just phenomenal in the show. Like, she's so good. And she's worked so hard to get to this place. And it's just a remarkable performance. I keep telling her I'm going to figure out a way to get her to take a second bow at the end of the show.
Mm.
But she won't do it. Like, she's just not that person. And I think she should just stay up there and bow. Just keep going, because it's just a wonderful bit of work on her part. But yeah, like you said, I feel like everybody's doing a really good job.
Oh, our friend Michelle Weatherby, man, hockey 101 to kick off Act Two was phenomenal.
Isn't that moment great? Like, and that's another one. Like Michelle's worked very hard on that. Like, she's obviously a very gifted comedic performer, but as someone who came into it knowing zero about hockey. Like, it was just like, it's just like all this terminology and all this stuff, and all it had to be delivered in this very specific and very funny sort of way. Plus, she's got a whiteboard up there. It's unreal. Like, she's just, she really gets it done.
Well, it was a lot of fun. The Hockey Mom playing through this weekend, through Saturday at Penobscot Theater Company in Bangor. You managed to see some movies once again. Let's talk about them. What did you like? What did you not like? What did you see?
You're not going to believe it, Rich. We got four more.
Whoa, week, man.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't like I look at it and I'm like, how did this even happen? Like, how did we get to this place? Just the way some releases timed out. And for instance, we had an unfortunate cancellation of our show on Thursday night because one of the younger cast members was dealing with a bout of stomach flu. And so I had an unexpected night off, and so we went to the movies, and we saw the movie. We'll start with this one. We saw Ambulance, Michael Bay's new movie.
Oh boy!
So we talk about this kind of pretty regularly in this segment. The sort of dearth of original, sort of non-IP based. Filmmaking, like everything's got to be a sequel or a reboot or a franchise or what have you. And there are relatively few filmmakers who can take an original idea, such as it is, and bring it to the big screen. Turns out one of those people is Michael Bay. I will say this movie is based on a Danish film from about 20 years ago. I don't really count that. That doesn't fall in the same sort of category as this other stuff to me. So I'm kind of painting with a broad brush here. But that being said, it is very much the Michael Bay experience. Like, it's, there's over-the-top action set pieces and overwrought interpersonal dynamics, and the narrative cohesion is kind of lacking. But that's the thing, man. Like, it's Michael Bay. You're not here for explorations of the complexity of the human condition. You're not here for taut dialogue or subtext. You're here to watch guns being fired and vehicles being crashed in explosions. You know it. I know it. And here's the thing. Michael Bay absolutely knows it. So here's the deal. You've got a gentleman by the name of Will Sharp, played by Yahya Abdul-Mateen II. He's a military veteran struggling with some financial difficulties. He and his wife have just had a new baby, and his wife is in dire need of an experimental cancer treatment. It's not covered by insurance, and it's going to go out of pocket close to $250,000. He's trying to find work. It isn't going well. He's got nowhere else to turn, so he reaches out to his adoptive brother, Danny, played by Jake Gyllenhaal, who is a career criminal, and asks for a loan. Instead, Danny talks Will into joining the crew he's put together to execute his $32 million bank heist. Will reluctantly agrees because, you know, that his share can help save his family. Well, Rich, wouldn't you know it, the job goes sideways. Before long, they're in a shootout with the police. Only Will and Danny manage to escape, but in the process, they shoot a cop. They're hemmed in, but they find their way out by way of the ambulance brought in to help the injured police officer. And so the next thing you know, Will's behind the wheel. Danny's holding the EMT, played by Isaac Gonzalez, hostage, and the chase is on. And then we just sort of careen back and forth across Los Angeles as this citywide manhunt pursues them. You know, they've got this injured cop in the ambulance, so no one's going to push it too far. But as these other players enter the picture, there's an FBI agent who conveniently enough went to college with Danny. And then there's a guy known simply as Poppy, played by the wonderful A. Martinez, who's an old criminal pal of Will and Danny's father, who is also a notorious criminal, just by the way. Circumstances get even more complicated. The chase continues, and now, you know, it's a question as to who, if anyone, is going to survive. And that's kind of it. Like, you wouldn't think that's enough story for 136 minutes of movie, but, I mean, again, it's Michael Bay we're talking about. It's so funny, because, you know, Michael Bay's not everyone's cup of tea, obviously. And he has absolutely some really significant flaws as a filmmaker. But the stuff he is good at, he is extremely good at. And there is a lot of that stuff in this movie. Like, you've got the set pieces that sort of defy physics, whether we're talking about shootouts or car chases or explosions or the various combinations. They're big, they're loud, they're full of spectacle, you know, and we've got the, you know, contained segments inside the ambulance, but still have that same sort of energy. He's also done some really good work with drones in this movie. Like, there are some really interesting shots that are achieved that, you know, you wouldn't be able to do, you know, even 10 years ago. But now with the advances of drone technology, like, you can really paint some very different pictures. As far as the story, I don't know. Like, but everyone's motivations are either rudimentary or kind of incomprehensible. Sometimes they're both. You know, nothing seems to be informed by anything beyond Bay's desire to watch something go really fast or explode really hard, or, again, occasionally both. There are occasional efforts towards advancing the story, but they're just kind of dropped into the dialogue without any warning. They get batted around for a couple of minutes, and then they disappear, and we never really learn about anything with these people or why they're doing what they're doing beyond a surface level. Man, like, I love Jake Gyllenhaal. I really do. And he's someone who has really made some interesting choices over the course of his career. But he's never been one to be afraid to really go for it and get weird. And he does that here. But it doesn't quite work. It's slick. It's over the top. But it never really coheres into anything. But, you know, it's sometimes you need more than crazy eyes. You know what I mean? Yahya Abdul-Mateen, who is an incredibly gifted actor, is given almost nothing to work with, despite ostensibly being the co-star of the film. Like, it's just this sort of good guy in over his head. We get that from the first minutes, and we don't really get anything beyond that. And, you know, there are some decent supporting turns, but for the most part, it's a three-person operation with the two of them and Isaac Gonzalez, who is actually quite good considering how little she's actually given to do. But yeah, ultimately, it's big, it's loud, it's dumb. The action sequences defy physics. The character actions defy logic. But I feel very strongly that there should always be room at the movie theater for this kind of movie. Like, dumb popcorn munchers can be fun. And if you're in the right mood, this one will be fun. You know, like, say what you will about the guy. Michael Bay is always true to himself. And as an added bonus, look, I mean, the odds are we're not going to see Ambulance 2.
Well, I'm not going to. I know that. All right, that's one. What else did you see, Alan?
Oh, well, speaking of movies with two in the title, want to talk about Sonic the Hedgehog 2? Because I saw that.
Yes, I do want to hear about it, especially if this is the last film from Jim Carrey as he's hinting about retiring.
He really, honestly, like, we'll get to it, but, you know, there are worse ways he could go out, honestly. Look, we talked about this before. Video game movies tend to be bad. Like, that's just how it is. Like, Hollywood can't really translate that sort of video game IP to the big screen consistently. You know, they're not all terrible. Some are, you know, at least okay. And the first Sonic the Hedgehog movie was that kind of okay. Like I saw it, and it was a perfectly acceptable kids movie that I promptly forgot almost entirely about until I realized they were making another one. Then it's like, oh, right, that movie. But look, is this new one as good as the first one? It's not. Sequels rarely are. The story's pretty scattered, and it's like, it's so long. Like, in what world do we need a video game movie to be over 2 hours long? I don't understand the choices. It's only over by a couple of minutes, but still, like, 2 hours is a long time to expect a child, which is your target audience, to sit and watch a movie. That being said, I actually had a pretty good time watching this movie. There's a couple of decent set pieces. The performances are surprisingly engaging, and I will happily concede that my experience was colored largely by the fact that the screening I attended had a bunch of kids in the audience, and you know, their enthusiasm absolutely contributed to my own enjoyment of the film. Like, it's tough to be like grumpy and dour when the kids scattered throughout the theater are clearly having the time of their lives and just constantly just chattering in, like, sheer delight. Like, I hate talking in movies, unless it's a kid who's clearly having a good time, in which case, talk all you want, kiddos. Because, you know, it's so funny, but it's very different for me. But, all right, so, as for the story itself, such as it is, Sonic, voiced by Ben Schwartz, is coming into his own following the defeat of the evil Dr. Robotnik, that's Jim Carrey. He's trying to become a superhero, but he's not really handling his business. His mentor and guardian, Tom Wachowski, that's James Marsden, does his best to steer Sonic in the right direction. But, you know, I mean, he's still just, you know, a kid. I mean, a blue animated hedgehog kid, but a kid. Meanwhile, Robotnik is plotting his escape from outer space exile in order to return to Earth and exact his revenge on Sonic. That timeline is accelerated by the arrival of an echidna named Knuckles, voiced by, wait for it, Idris Elba.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He's on a quest to destroy Sonic for reasons of his own, basically to get his hands on something called the Master Emerald, a MacGuffin of unimaginable power. They team up, make their way back to Earth. At that same time, from another dimension, a two-tailed fox named, well, Tails, appears to lend his assistance to Sonic. And in the middle of all this, Tom and his wife Maddie, played by Tika Sumpter, go to Hawaii for the wedding of Maddie's sister. Because, you know, one thing you want in a kid's movie is a needless subplot about a Hawaiian wedding, because kids love that stuff. From there, usual hijinks, Sonic and Tails try to track down the Master Emerald before Robotnik and Knuckles can find it, because the gem falls into the wrong hands, fate of the entire world, blah, blah, blah. And as it turns out, there are also other forces at work targeting Sonic and his friends, some of which come from surprising sources. There's also the slapstick CGI action and already dated pop culture references and the sort of cartoony chaos that you expect from this movie. Like, if you saw the first one, you know the deal. If you didn't see the first one, you probably still know the deal. Like, this is not a movie interested in anything beyond maintaining the status quo. Like, these people have clearly worked out the formula that they want to follow, and they have no intention of straying from it. Still, like, at least they grasp the fundamentals of what makes this character fun. Like, it's a movie for kids that is willing to be for kids. I mean, there are a couple of bones thrown to the grown-ups in the audience, but big and loud and goofy and silly in all the ways that will appeal to young viewers. Like, it's, yeah, is it dumb? Yes, absolutely. So what? Like, as I said, like, I watched this with a bunch of kiddos, and they had a fantastic time. And, I mean, as far as that goes, Sony could do worse. You know, and it's like, hey, man, like, sometimes you get to watch a hedgehog snowboard down a mountain, or, you know, get into a fist fight with an echidna, or, like, a bunch of flying robots. Like, this is not, this movie is not about subtlety. You know, there are themes of, like, growing up and family and friendship and all that stuff. Very kid movie 101, but it's perfectly okay. But the performances are key to my enjoyment of this movie. Ben Schwartz has dialed it back a little bit as Sonic, although we do get a classic, you know, Jean Ralphio, the worst, you know, kind of moment. You know, shout out to the Parks and Rec heads out there. I got to talk about Idris Elba for a second, because not only is his presence in this movie kind of baffling, even more baffling is that he seems to be making an effort. Like, he's not coasting. Like, this is not phoned in. Like, he's actually trying to do something, which, again, it can't be stressed enough, is a super strong computer-generated echidna with giant fists. And Idris Elba is treating it like an actual, like, role. Like, it's just one more reason why he's absolutely the man. Live-action side, you know, like, Marsden and Sumter, they know why they're here. They hit their marks, say their lines. They emote with animated animals when they're asked to. It's fine. But, again, Jim Carrey. Watching this movie, it's like, the dude clearly just relishes playing this part. Like, it's not quite as physically engaged as it was the first time around, but he channels that energy into this just wonderfully unhinged kind of performance. Like, it's just, he's just so ridiculous, like, just leaving chewed-to-bit scenery and, like, ham smell, like, in his wake wherever he goes on screen. It's fantastic. Like, I can't stress enough how much fun it is to watch Jim Carrey have so much fun doing something so incredibly stupid. So, yeah, it's a movie that it's exactly what it purports to be. Like, it's nothing more, nothing less. Not great cinema. Kids are going to like it. Adults will probably manage not to fall asleep. And for a video game movie, a sequel video game movie, like, that's a win.
There you go. We're talking with Alan Adams here on Downtown. What's next?
We'll bang this one out real quick. I wasn't necessarily a great viewing experience, but I had the opportunity. We watched the new thriller, All the Old Knives, which is a new movie that dropped on Amazon Prime Video this past weekend. It's a spy thriller. It's interesting. It's an interesting sort of experiment, almost. Like how much better can a so-so movie be made if your two lead performances are excellent? How much can you improve a movie that is otherwise formulaic and kind of dull by having, like, real electricity in your two leads? Not enough is the answer, because Chris Pine and Thandie Newton. They star in this movie. They are outstanding. They have wonderful chemistry. Their performances are both very, very, very good. Otherwise, the movie can't really get out of its own way. Like, it's a multiple timelines movie that's all kind of muddy, and the plot dynamics are convoluted in, you know, ways beyond the standard spy thriller sorts of ways. And so, you know, the movie itself can't really live up to the bar that they're setting. I say that, it's worth seeing, like, their performances, worth the cost of admission, but you're going to be a little disappointed and find yourself wondering, like, what might have been. The basic gist, back in 2012, we're in Vienna at a CIA station. They become wrapped up in an airline hijacking despite their best efforts. It ends in tragedy. We have agents Henry Pelham, that's Chris Pine, and Celia Harrison, that's Thandie Newton. They're lovers as well as co-workers. They're part of it. We've got analysts played by Odd Kamel and David Dawson, and the wonderful Jonathan Pryce is here, although he doesn't get a ton to do. And the station chief is a guy named Vic Wallinger, played by the wonderful Lawrence Fishburne. Like I said, it's a great cast. 8 years later, long after the investigation has closed, Wallinger brings Pelham back in and tasks him with tracking down new information. They've learned that their failure in the mission 8 years ago may have been due to the presence of a mole, You know, they want Chris Pine to figure out the truth behind what happened, even if it requires him to sort of reopen some old wounds. So he reaches out to Celia, who left the agency long ago, moved on to make a new life, and they wind up in this nearly empty wine bar in California, reliving the past. And we're sort of moving back and forth between past and present as they kind of realize that the spark between them never went away, even as they're regarding each other with suspicion. And, you know, we're bouncing back and forth. The complexity gets deeper and deeper. We're questioning everybody's motives. Who was the mole? Was there a mole? What will the consequences be? It's a lot. Like I said, the movie just can't get out of its own way. Like, obviously, when you're moving around in timelines, like, the narrative is kind of fractured by design. Like, that's just the nature of it. But it's just, it's so muddy, and it renders the entirety of the movie kind of difficult to follow for stretches, and also kind of dull, which is a real bummer. Like, and when you don't have that sort of succinct storytelling, you know, not even great lead performances can make up that difference. You know, a good espionage thriller should have compelling examples of spycraft and thrills, and this movie doesn't really have either of those, which is, and even when it does, they're so fleeting that they kind of get forgotten very quickly as they're left behind. Again, it just feels like a lot of wasted potential, which is only accentuated by the fact that Pine and Newton are just phenomenal screen partners. Like, you don't see that kind of chemistry that often, and it's just regrettable that it's sort of mired in this movie that would have been an absolute disaster without them at the center of it. And you, like I mentioned, the supporting cast too, like Fishburne and Price, they're excellent as well. Like, just a wonderful collection of performers. But their work largely for naught, because they're sort of operating in this less than fully realized world. Like, their motivations are just very frustratingly opaque. Like, we don't know why they're doing the things that they do or saying the things that they say. And without that justification, we're just wondering why we should care about what we're watching. I mean, again, it's dull. And look, when your spy thriller is called All the Old Knives, like, it probably ought to be sharper than this.
All right. We've only got about a minute left. What's our last one, Al?
Oh, man. Quick and easy. Tony Hawk, Until the Wheels Fall Off. Documentary about Tony Hawk, currently streaming on HBO Max. One of the best sports documentaries I've seen in ages.
Wow.
Absolutely phenomenal. I've never, like, I can count on one hand the number of times I've stood on a skateboard, but I know who Tony Hawk is. You know who Tony Hawk is. Everybody knows who Tony Hawk is. Like, he's a ubiquitous sort of cultural figure who's transcended his sport. And it's this movie is this wonderful sort of look back at his beginnings, like, you know, in the late 70s, early 80s, to this pinnacle of global superstardom. We follow along the ebb and flow of skateboard culture. Lots of archival footage, wonderful talking head interviews, not just with Tony and with his family, but with his peers from the time, like all these fascinating sort of figures from the skateboarding world who have all matured into these wonderfully thoughtful and interesting people. I will say it's a great looking movie. Like, you'll see all kinds of remarkable things. But the big takeaway for me was, you would think that a guy who was so clearly the absolute apex of his sport, you would think he would generate some sort of degree of professional jealousy from his peers. But man, like, I'm sure there's some of that somewhere, but all of these guys, like, even the ones who didn't like what he did or didn't care for his style, like, they all love him. Like, they all absolutely adore him, and that affection comes through, and it's just, you're left to watch this guy who loves what he does, but is also obsessed with what he does, and the sort of dark turns that can take when you push yourself too far. Like, this dude's in his early 50s, and he's still trying to do this stuff. And, you know, there's, you reach a point where it's like everyone around him is like, hey man, like, you know, you're a 53-year-old dad of four. Like, maybe, maybe you don't need to do the 900 anymore. But yeah, it's just a fascinating watch. Easily the best movie I watched all weekend. And if you have any interest in just quality documentary filmmaking, let alone sports stuff, you should really check it out. Tony Hawk, Until the Wheels Fall Off.
Are the Duplass brothers involved in the film at all? Because I saw Mark tweet about it a couple of times.
Yeah, they're producers.
Ah, makes sense. There you go. They're everywhere. Yeah. All right, thanks, Alan. We appreciate it. As always, hope you're feeling better, and Knock 'Em Dead starting when you return on Wednesday night to Hockey Mom.
Thanks, man.